spies are boring.
A special season of Spy Stories in celebration of Canada Day 2021. Join us for 10 daily episodes as we explore the world of espionage in Canada. Season starts July 1st.
Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring!
Hello and welcome to a wonderful episode of Canadian Politics is Boring. I'm here with the unobtainable Jesse Harley.
I'm lovely, Reese. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really excited. I've got some, the survey that we've been doing that you can still go to our website or the links on our Instagram page and find and fill out the survey. I've got some, we asked the question.
CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com.
Yeah, our website. That's what I said.
People don't know what our website is.
Well, it's pretty obvious. Canadian Politics is boring. And you just add a .com on the end. What else would it be? I've got some of the reasons why people listen to the show that they left on the survey that I thought you might appreciate.
Okay, yeah, hit me up.
To hear Reese make Jesse snort when he laughs. Reese butchering languages.
That is fun.
The fun facts that I can tell my friends and either make them disappointed or proud of Canada. Reese's dry wit, Jesse's film industry stories, the tangents, the little snapshots into East Coast life, and the almost educational content.
Hear, hear.
The intoxicating sexual chemistry. That was another one.
And whoever you are, I'm glad we turn you on. Jesus. It's date night, hon. Oh, what are you doing? We got some candles here. I'm going to put some incense on. And just real nice and low. The soothing sounds of Canadian Politics is Boring with Jesse and Reese, just to turn your
brain. Doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, I know, right? Like,
yeah. The Canada's only erogenous political podcast.
Someone out there right now is rubbing some oil over their partner's shoulders and playing some low-level jazz in the background, and we're just kind of blasting through the speakers right now. Someone's moaning. Yeah. Someone's moaning.
If you thought Bridgerton was going to pump blood into your glands, then wait till you listen to this.
Say that again?
I'm not going to say that again.
Bridgerton? Ever. What's Bridgerton?
It's like a saucy Netflix period drama.
Okie dokie. Yeah.
Anyway, somebody said, I'm into politics. I'd like to hear Jesse's perspective, as he is not.
That's which is true. Good.
Yeah. The ramble is a great break from COVID and just feels like being in a bar with your friends. Well, whoever wrote that, if you ever want to get a beer, we'll do it. And then we can actually be your friend in a bar.
As long as you pay for the beer. That's fine.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And we choose the bar. And this is my favorite one. They just put the B word with a little winking emoji.
They just put, what? The B word? What's the B word? Word?
What, you've forgotten bitch? Already. Remember the Bigfoot episode, Jesse?
Oh! I'm not gonna they literally typed, you're not censoring yourself. They typed
no, they said the B word with a winking emoji.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, yeah.
So it's good so to know our audience. Our so audience is funnier than us.
The Jason Kenney episode is now synonymous with the B word.
I know. Anyway, are you ready? Are you ready for this episode?
I'm ready to learn. Oh, what was the most popular muffin?
Oh, I didn't check. Do you want me to check?
Sure.
Jesse added a question in there.
I'm useful.
What is your favorite muffin? We had 81 responses, and the most popular muffin is...
There were some really elaborate answers.
Blueberry. Blueberry. Oh, all right. Somebody put, that's private. I feel attacked. Baby flavor. That's Justin's favorite. I'm more normal, so blueberry.
Baby flavor. Jesus.
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau eating a baby flavored muffin. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Somebody put, my mom bakes these delicious apple cinnamon muffins.
That's so cute.
Send some to us.
Yeah, please.
If you send it to canadianpoliticsboring@gmail.com, if you've got any tasty muffins.
Kid, man, do you know how?
Okay.
Yeah.
So what?
We need to get a P.O. box for people to start sending us baked goods.
It's heated. Just to keep them warm.
Can you picture showing up at the UPS store, you know, opening up your little mailbox, pulling out like a container of steaming baked goods?
What you need to do is go onto YouTube and search internet ham. If you're watching this, there's a great British comedian who did a thing all about internet ham that gets delivered to your house via the internet. And the tagline is, you'll love its weird taste. It's good comedy. Anyway.
Jesse, not as good as inhaling.
I
was just going to say, not as good as inhaling wafakak ham, though.
It is. Ham is best enjoyed in a gas form. If you don't know what we're talking about, you have to go back and listen to the wafakak episodes. So,
oh my god, anyway. We'd make a killing with vapor flavored, like ham flavored vapor for vaporizers. Except you can't sell. Yeah, no, that'd be.
But maybe there's no nicotine in it. Maybe it's just pure meat, like gas meat.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway, I got a question for you, Jesse.
Hold on. I am now picturing someone taking a cartridge of our ham flavored vapor, which is just pure meat, stuffing it in their vaporizer, pressing the button down, and instead of vapor coming out, it's just like a liquefied form of ham squeezing through where the vapor would, and they suck on that.
Nice. Okay,
I'm done.
Should we just talk about this episode now instead?
I can't get that out of my head.
I got a question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of the Iroquois Confederacy?
No.
So this episode is called The Iroquois Confederacy, Democracy Before It Was Cool. So...
you're losing your touch, man. You were coming up with some really good titles.
Losing my touch. Well, maybe I'll change it. Maybe by the time you listen to this, the title won't match what I just said.
Maybe you had titles like "Hanging Used to Be Fine," and now this is sounding like a history lesson, like a textbook, a chapter in a textbook.
Have you ever? You know who the Iroquois are?
I don't know much about them. I do believe they're a native tribe somewhere in Canada. Yes.
The Iroquoian is actually a language that was spoken across the territory was huge. It was the lakes around Ontario, Huron, Erie, in present day New York, Pennsylvania, southern Ontario, and Quebec. So it was actually made up of different nations. So the ancient Iroquois Great League of Peace was basically they formed almost like a version of what you would kind of consider the United States or the Canadian provinces. They formed that in 1142. It's the oldest living participatory democracy on earth. That was founded by somebody called the Great Peacemaker over like roughly 1,000 years ago.
This is the first democracy.
Yeah.
Right. What about Greece? No, Greece wasn't a democracy, was it?
No, it wasn't. And also it was not continuous either because it was Greece was a dictatorship for a fair while.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah. Okay. I got that wrong. Yeah.
So, so a lot of people, and that's the crazy thing about this is that, I'll admit I was pretty ignorant to like the forms of government in a lot of indigenous communities, but, this was amazing. The way that the kind of what happened was they had six warring nations, and
six what?
The nations who were constantly fighting each other. So they were weakening their societies, and the great peacemaker, who was the wise chief Hiawatha, basically went to all of them, traveled to each of the other nations, and shared ideas for peace. And then they formed, they presented the great law of peace, and it united the five nations into a League of Nations, or the Iroquois Confederacy.
What?
And it became essentially like a democratic state.
This is. Before
this is like, this is like 1,000 years ago,
but in the land that we now call Canada
and America, it kind of straddled the border.
Okay,
it blew my mind exactly, and it gets crazier as well. It gets more amazing. So they called themselves the Haudenosaunee, and it means people of the long house, and they had these giant bark-covered longhouses that many families kind of lived in together. And they had a really sophisticated, thriving society of about 5,000 people when European explorers first arrived.
Wow.
They maintained their own leadership, and they all agreed that common causes would be decided together with a Grand Council of Chiefs. And it was based on peace and consensus rather than fighting. And it just seemed really ahead of its time. So they had a matriarchal
system. How long did this stretch for? Like, what was the
land? It does technically still exist, but obviously the land is not, the land has been kind of taken over, mm-hmm. and a lot of the kind of individual.
No, but I mean, at the time, how big was the? I think you mentioned it earlier.
It was a huge swathe of land. It was around the Great Lakes, all the way to Quebec, all the way down to into New York and everything. So it was a huge chunk of land that they controlled and inhabited.
And they formed a democracy amongst various tribes throughout this huge swath of land.
Yeah, and they lived in peace for like nearly 1,000 years.
I'm just wondering how that would work, though, because like communication would be very difficult, and if like rules were put down.
Well, I guess you could say that about any time, just because they didn't have our technology. Like, it doesn't mean they could. They just ran things the way that they could with what they had then. So, do you know something crazy, though? It was a matriarchal system. So,
oh, that's cool.
So men and women had different roles, but they both would hold real power, and no person was entitled to own land, but it was believed that women were appointed as stewards of the land. And as they raised children, they were therefore held at a high regard because they kind of created and nurtured life. If the leader wasn't very good and became corrupt or wouldn't listen to people, the clan mothers, so the senior kind of female people in the clan, had the power to strip him of his leadership and could be removed any time by the council of women elders. And the chief's sister had historically been responsible for nominating his successor, and they were kind of highly respected in society. So they were basically the people who would kind of make sure that the power didn't go to the head of whoever was in charge at the time.
That's amazing.
What a system.
We should adopt it today. Probably do a lot better than our current system, honest to God. Like.
It's amazing. So what happened was when the
just French, like if Justin Trudeau, like if people were like, instead of voting him out, we just have this giant sort of, I don't know, house full of grandmothers that will just strip him of his power. Yeah, we don't have
exactly.
Yeah, we just talk to the hut of grandmothers. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just grand, and also you just find my grandmothers that they there's no bullshit with them. They cut to the point. They've seen it all before.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just to knock it off. Quit eating babies.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's just exactly.
Yeah. No more babies. Just I don't know. Just eat different species. You know. Why not wean yourself off by just eating veal for a while? I don't know. The kind of sense he needs spoken to him.
We are never getting him on this show.
He's got a sense of humor. He knows we don't think he actually eats babies. Our audience knows he doesn't actually eat babies. It's just funny to keep bringing it up all the time.
I mean, I hope they don't think
it's so improbable. So improbable. I know we're going to get people going, I believed you're someone finally the truth. Someone was speaking the truth. So French, Dutch, and English colonists, and New France, which was what Canada was referred to, what would be Canada was referred to at the time, they basically realized that they had to gain favor from the Iroquois people because they were so powerful and they controlled so much land.
Who was this again?
The colonists from Europe. So they used to trade with them, and it was a really lucrative trade for both of them. And they all had to kind of establish friendly relations to secure their own land and agree borders with them, really. So for about 200 years, they were really powerful in North American kind of policy when the colonies were being established, and being aligned with them offered you like huge advantages. So they would always like be trying to, the European powers would always be trying to be on their good side and trade with them.
This is stuff I've never heard this before, especially when you hear about like European colonists coming to claim the land. You're not taught this stuff.
No, exactly. And they had a lot of independence at this time. So, and they as a lot of the French settlers, they became quite close with them because they settled nearby, and they often worked with them, and they wouldn't attack. They would help attack other European powers, but they would never kind of do anything against their own nation. They participated in French raids on the Dutch and later English settlers, with some Mohawk and other Iroquois settled. In general, the Iroquois resisted attacking their own people.
Right. Okay. Cool. So,
and they had a constitution that was written on two belts. And it was basically this. What you realize from this is that a lot of the U.S. Constitution is based on the Iroquois Constitution.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
So
hold on. What?
Yeah. There's
no. Hold. when was the American Constitution written?
I think it was around 1754, or around that time. Oh no, the Continental Congress was 1776. So
you're a very Benjamin quick Googler.
No. I've got is it my notes, because I knew you'd ask these kind of questions. So Benjamin Franklin referenced the Iroquois model as he presented his plan of the Union at the Albany Congress in 1754. He presented the Iroquois
model. He had it.
Yeah, he had it, and he presented it.
Hold on, what was he doing with it?
No, he didn't steal the belts. He was aware of their system and how it worked, and introduced it. So when he met the seven colonies, he actually invited the Iroquois to come and address the Continental Congress as well.
Oh my God. So everyone is North America is looking at Benjamin Franklin for having in pretty much like, how do I word this properly?
Well, he isn't coming.
He stole it.
Well, no, but he invited them along. He didn't take it off them. He was like, look at these dudes. They're doing a great job. I'm going to bring them along, and they can help us develop the form of government we want, because they're doing a great job and have done for hundreds of years.
Hold up. It's time for a mid-roll announcement. That's right. You get to be the lucky so-and-so of an ad.
And do you know the best part? You get to listen to this ad for free.
We won't even charge you.
Free ads all the time. So... like
that's remarkable.
So some of the
there's a lot of people out there. Okay, sorry, you continue. This is just
bullying. No, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. So the Iroquois Confederacy, they said things like they restricted members from holding more than one office in the Confederacy. So there's the ineligibility clause in the United States Constitution, which bars serving members of Congress from holding established office by the federal government. So basically, you can't be a senator and a congressperson at the same time, or president and a senator. So that's similar to the Iroquois model. They outlined processes to remove the leaders, and there's, again, very similar kind of articles in the Constitution that follows it. Two branches of legislature with procedures for passing laws. So, again, very similar to Congress and the Senate. It delineates who has the power to declare war. So Congress has the power to declare war, and it was basically saying that, you know, that's a very similar system to the Iroquois. And creates a balance of power between the Iroquois Confederacy and individual tribes, which is basically the power balance between the United States federal government and state level governments.
Amazing. So they just borrowed all of this, all of these ideas from the Iroquois.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of, you know, I think it's obviously different, but there's essences from that, that, because at the same time, a lot of the European countries weren't democracies. They were, run by kings and emperors, and, you know, they were, monarchy was still kind of the main form of government in a lot of Western Europe. So this, you know, they were making it as they went along, but they were borrowing from a system that was right in front of them that made a lot of sense to them.
That's amazing.
So in 1988, the U.S. Senate paid tribute with a resolution that said the confederation of the original 13 colonies into one republic was influenced by the political system developed by the Iroquois Confederacy, as were many of the democratic principles which were incorporated into the Constitution itself. So it's kind of they've kind of said that they did. No one's hiding it.
Okay. And that was recently, though. That was...
But do you know what? Yeah, that was 1988. They were still talking about it, which is amazing.
So what happened to it?
So, before we go into what happened, I'm going to talk about a really cool policy they had that we should be doing now. So the model of governance was all about meeting the needs of the seventh generation to come. And that is basically
the seventh.
Yeah, so even a lot of Native American communities now still follow the seventh generation kind of approach, which is originally established by the Iroquois Confederacy. And the idea is that the decisions that are made today should lead to sustainability for seven generations into the future.
Wow.
And it was basically a lot of the democratic principles and focus of kinship and bonds and leadership, which is based on honor and respect is earned by service to others rather than material gain, was all based on the kind of Iroquois approach. But I love the idea of, like, if the government had to think seven generations ahead on the decisions it makes.
Can you picture?
I know. But what an amazing thing, though. It's like, I think that there'd be a lot of problems. There'd be so many problems that don't exist now if that would happen seven generations ago.
I know, right? Oh my God, this is amazing. Seven.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so as we know with history, eventually the kind of European colonies, there was the war, the American Revolution, and the crown, the league, or the Iroquois Confederacy kept his treaty promises to the British crown. They basically sided with the British during the revolution. The British retreated without kind of bringing the Iroquois to the negotiating table, and they had to abandon their lands and were kind of scattered. A lot of them then returned to, they had to flee up to Canada, or a lot of them were kind of moved around to different places in America.
Well, most of this was Canadian lands.
Well, Canadian land and New York and Pennsylvania as well, so and Erie. So eventually it kind of broke up the continuous kind of landmass that they controlled. So it's now become like a decentralized political and diplomatic entity so they do have, there's some kind of unity, but the Six Nations were kind of separated in that sense. And they kind of still refer to themselves as a confederacy, but they don't have, you know, that massive land or the influence that was there, because obviously Europeans arrived and then became a country, you know, four nations, and all hell, you know, basically destroyed the way of life of people.
Building condos with Starbucks at the bottom.
Exactly. Yeah. Condos with Starbucks and, I don't know, like every other house is a Subway. And what happened was then, so those remaining in New York were required to live mostly on reservations. In 1784, 6,000 Iroquois faced nearly a quarter of a million New Yorkers who were land hungry.
When was this?
This was 1784. So basically, okay. They were about 6 million acres of Iroquois land that was taken over by New Yorkers who wanted to expand and take more space.
Wow.
And Iroquois lost most of his property. But there were still some people settled in Ontario and Quebec in Canada. And they in the 19th century, they actually built some really prosperous settlements. They were doing farming. They built sleds, snowshoes, boats. And in 1884, 100 Canadian Iroquois were hired by the British government to serve as river pilots, and they were thanked personally by Queen Victoria for their services to Queen and country, which I'm sure...
What year was that?
That was 1884.
Wow.
Yeah. And also, in 1886, a bridge was being built on the St. Lawrence. The St. Lawrence. A number of Iroquois men were basically hired to as skilled steel workers to help build the bridge. And a number of bridges and skyscrapers in Canada and the USA were actually built by Iroquois steelmen.
Wow.
There are about the population at the moment. Well, the population at its peak in the 18th century was 10,000. Then it decreased to 4,000 and it recovered back to 7,000 by 1910. And there are probably about 51,255 Six Nations or Iroquois Confederacy people who live in Canada today. And they have their own, a lot of them have their own forms of citizenship. They started to kind of try and create their own passports, but not all of them are recognized by different countries. So there's kind of a battle to still exist in that sense within this kind of modern context that we live.
Jesus. Welcome. So stay tuned soon for Reese and Jesse's new podcast, History is Fucking Sad.
Yeah, I mean, history is always sad. Yeah, I was talking about this today with with Grace from Minute Women about how the more you learn about history, the more you realize that it is getting better slowly.
Oh, good. Okay, well, that's...
But also, and I found this really cool line. It basically said that the Iroquois Confederacy was referred to in modern terms as libertarian socialism.
Cool.
Which I still don't quite know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what that means either. If you, our wonderful listener, wants to have some fun, depending on what podcast player you're on, some of them do it, play us at half speed. We sound drunk out of our fucking minds. It's hilarious.
I'm going to go and do that after this. Also, I just wanted to say, if I got any of the pronunciations wrong or any of that history wrong, let me know and I will... Because there's a lot to research. It was very complex, but fascinating. I wanted to talk about it.
Like,
but I'm
aware. This was fascinating. Honestly, it wasn't as hilarious as some of our other topics, but I was genuinely interested. Like, this is, I'm like, what? Yeah, this. You don't grab me like this as much. You used to with some of the drunken shenanigans, and then you had to switch it up with some fucking gore fest. You tried to get my attention with like extraordinarily depressing shit, and now it's just this is you brought it back to fascinating. So this was fascinating to me, honestly.
Yeah. I love the fact that, like, you know, especially the racism of people assuming that, you know, the European kind of systems that came over were more advanced or somehow, only to, you know, at this time when this like functioning democracy was working, there were still kings and queens murdering each other. And, you know, I just find it amazing.
Not directly. They'd hire someone else to do the murder.
Oh, yeah. They wouldn't do their own killing. They were royalty. Yeah. They wouldn't get their hands dirty with the blood of a sibling. But, you know, my point is that, they, you know, they had a superior system of government. And the American kind of constitution is kind of like the greatest hits. Did you see what I mean? It's good.
And then we just kind of American Canada came in, took everything over, and look where we are now.
I just find this one is kind of buried in history as well. Nobody ever talks about the giant functioning 1,000-year-old democracy that was in North America when the Europeans arrived.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Honest to God. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Cool.
Well, if you want to go and tell us why you like our show, find our survey and let us know.
It's on our website, CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com.
And this just in, 77.8% said they listen because of the host chemistry / bromance.
So I thought you were going to say the intense sexual chemistry. No,
just one person does it.
Just one person said it. Okay, that's probably the best.
Yeah. So yeah,
there we go. Intoxicating. It was intoxicating sexual chemistry, right? It was intoxicating.
It's like, they could barely stand. Anyway,
let's give our audience a different call to action today, Reese. Because like the whole point of giving them one thing at a time is so that we don't become repetitive, monotonous. We're becoming repetitive, monotonous with doing that. So we have to give them something unique to do. Yeah, you should be ashamed. So call to action is
go and learn about the Iroquois Confederacy for yourselves.
Oh, there you go. That's good.
and further forms of indigenous government. Because they're fascinating.
That is fascinating. All right, I'm down with that. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. That's a good call to action. Enrich your minds, you lazy buggers. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Anyway, you have a great day.
Are you talking to me or our audience?
Both. Oh, you and the audience.
Thank you. You as well, audience, and Reese.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jesse, and audience. You're welcome.
Cool.
Reese. Okay, I'm going to go make a burger and fries and and then just plunk down on the couch and do nothing. Don't do what I do. Go do our call to action instead.
Yeah.
Don't do as we say, not as we do.
Exactly. Bye.
Okay. Bye. I guess. Okay. That's fine. We can go. We don't have to keep talking. That's fine. It's bye. Fine. I got nothing.